Avellaneda!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Here it is, Brock and Salk podcast numero two. Thank you to everybody who downloaded the first edition. I'm told some 32,000 people.
I thought it was 332,000.
I don't know.
I heard 3,332,000.
It's hard to figure out digits, so who knows? Brock's here.
33 million?
Kyle is here. Howdy is here, as you can tell.
Yeah.
We've moved studio, so I understand there were some problems with the audio in the other studio.
Oh, it was so bad. It was terrible.
Well, you chose the studio.
Oh, so you think I had a choice in that? No.
Is that you yelling in the new open, by the way?
Why are you yelling now? Would you just back off the mic
a little bit?
Howdy's like 10 times louder than the rest of us.
We stink, man.
Yeah, just chill out over there, Howdy. You chose us the awful studio, only studio here that doesn't work.
Howdy gets a seat at the table. I mean, again, look, he's right in the middle of us once again.
Well, the cool thing about, so people should know, we'll dig into a bunch of stuff today, but people should know that we are now recording. This will be our permanent home for our podcast recording. This is the same room. Now, it's been altered a little bit and upgraded, but this is the same room where the Brock and Salk show started. This is the original 710 studio before we built our palatial estate down the hall.
And you are
where Boy Howdy was named.
Yes. Yeah,
where he was christened.
Where Brock is sitting right now.
Yeah, I'm sitting where Howdy was. You're basically sitting where when Buhner came in and punched you in the kidneys.
Right, it was almost the exact same spot.
I'm not facing the same direction, but we were all in the same room together then, and this is sort of a... You know, even though it's moving forward, it's a little bit of a throwback for us kind of all being together.
I actually listened to the first one.
You did?
I sure did.
How was it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Howdy,
did you listen?
Oh, yeah, I listened to it about seven times.
So three of the four of us
listened. What? Mike,
did you enjoy our first podcast?
I was busy. I've been, very busy over the last week or so. I had to go to a North African show last night, concert, Tenariwen. I've been very busy.
Pretentious elitist,
things,
Mike, going out
pulling
to...
You in a
things
lot of
are complicated. Things are complicated in the Salk House these days.
No, I'm sorry. I had a play to go to and attend.
My
I couldn't consume any of this drivel that we've been putting out.
Requires African music at Benaroya Hall.
You know I don't do podcasts. I can't figure out how to work them. When we put this thing on the radio, I'll listen to it. I don't know how to work a podcast. What are you talking about?
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, or you can text
podcast. I don't even understand what that stuff means.
710-710.
Why is it now Apple Podcasts and not iTunes?
Oh, don't
how do
get
you please
me started.
Cite Podbay like you did in your famous
Podbay.
Tweet? Where are we on Podbay?
That's right. Still trending number three.
All right. That is enough. That's enough from all three of you guys. Let's start here. Let's start with some Seahawks. That's what we do.
Well, it would just be nice as a family if we're going to listen to it. Could you at least find the time?
Why? I didn't listen to our show when we did the show. Why would I listen to this? I got to listen to other shows. I have another job around here. That's why we're not doing this as a daily radio show.
So does
please.
Kyle. So does
you
Howdy.
You have another job that requires you to work like once a week.
Oh, please.
Stop.
Look at my board.
Did see pictures of you holding a large salmon on like a Tuesday
Stop.
Afternoon. I don't know.
Like, what are you talking about? Oh, Brock's super busy. He now has to do one football game a week for 3 months. I can't wait till we get till summer. Like, hey, Brock, what'd you do today? Jack. How about yesterday? Nothing. How about the day before that? I haven't done anything in a month. Like, what are you talking about? Oh, you're so busy. We're launching shows here. We got Danny and Gallant. We got Tom, Jake, and Stacy. I'm worried about what's going on the FM side. Like, come on,
okay,
man.
Fine.
I don't have time to
I'll
listen to some silly
grace.
Brock and Salk podcast.
What do you want to talk about?
Russell. This show is built on one thing, talking about quarterbacks more than anything else. And just reading through the commentary this week, locally, everyone's back and forth. Like, the Russell's a MVP candidate. And nationally, he's an afterthought. And so I find myself trying to figure out, okay, why is that? Because he has it all. He's doing all of the things that MVP candidates do.
Mm-hmm.
He is personally winning games for his team. I heard you say on Danny and Gallant, they'd be 1-4 without him. That might be true. Might be 2-3. I mean, I guess it depends who it would be. I mean, like if it was
Geno Smith, they'd be 1-4 behind.
They might be 0-5. Yeah. I mean, Geno Smith can't throw straight. But okay, 1-4. If they had a decent backup quarterback or brought somebody in, then maybe they'd be 3-2 or whatever. But Russell's making all the throws. He has all of the wow factor. that an MVP needs. He has every bit the wow factor of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, for every Patrick Mahomes pass, give me the Russell to Lockett or the Russell to Disley where he dropped that little ball in the bucket. Mm-hmm. How about the little throw he made to Penny up the right sideline? I mean, the play he made, my favorite play of the game last Thursday, was the touchdown to Carson, which didn't look like the most complicated play.
It's fourth down.
But it was fourth and five, yes. And the way his running ability draws the defense to him sets up the easiest catch that Carson almost dropped of all time. So he's making all the wow plays. He's winning games and doing them in prime time against marquee opponents like the Rams. He's running. He's throwing. He's accurate. He's setting records. He's doing everything you need to do,
right,
except for, and we'll just keep coming back to it, one thing. He's not leading the league in yards.
I guess.
So that's it.
I mean, he's leading it in pass rating.
He's got the superstar wife, yeah, right? He's in all the endorsement ads. It's everything but yards. What else could it possibly be at this point but yards, unless you're going to say location? Geography.
I guess, but even that, you're playing in prime time.
They're playing in prime time. They get four prime time games this year, so it's not. And when they don't play in prime time, they often are sort of the marquee game, right? So they got Tony Romo.
Is it a likability thing on a national level?
I don't think so. I think he's more likable nationally than he is locally. I mean, it's yards, and it can't be. I don't see how it can be anything else.
Yeah, I was listening as you were and reading a bunch over the last 4 or 5 days since that game on Thursday. And it is Christian McCaffrey. Oh, Christian McCaffrey.
In a league that
record setting,
all
running and receiving, and he's carrying the Panthers, and they're 3-2. It's Patrick Mahomes, right? And listening to the guys on our station here this week, playing a bunch of Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, like, oh, nobody makes these throws. Nobody can make these plays like Patrick Mahomes, when just a few days prior, on prime time,
right,
he's making the ridiculous look easy. And Coach Carroll, you know, afterwards, and coached for 7-8 years, while former players were mad he didn't get critical of Russell at times, it wasn't as if Pete constantly heaped praise, and we certainly didn't hear things like this.
I thought Russell played one of the best games I've ever seen him play. I just have never seen him have so much speaking of magic in him. All of the plays that he came up with his legs, running for one, but also not just to get out of trouble, but to find the receivers and make the throws, just one after another, after another, after another. The extraordinary play to Lock. And I honestly still haven't seen it. I didn't get a chance to see it yet. Everybody's just raving like it's one of the best catches they've ever seen.
One of the weird things about me growing up, and I don't even know if I've shared this with you, Mike, podcast form allows all of us as family to do this. You know, one thing that I weirdly really enjoyed watching all the time, especially in the Olympics and when it was around, was diving. Like Greg Louganis is a diver. I have no idea why that stuff fascinated me the way it did, but I would constantly, in the Olympics, I'd have to watch these guys. And do you remember, and they could pick their own level of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
That was also fascinating to me. Kind of like gymnastics, right? Can pick the level of floor routine that they want to play to. Like the degree of difficulty and the level at which Russell played on Thursday night on primetime was as high as you could ever play at the position. It left me sitting in that sports bar in Portland last Thursday night just like with my mouth agape, I don't know how many times. Anybody that ever played the position, the same way. Like, you're not supposed to be able to do that. You're supposed to miss 3 or 4 of those throws. And you know what? Over the years, he has. When he has scrambled, the ball, like, one hops. Oh, that thing just sailed wide. Like, he never hit every single target, which he did other than Jerron Brown in the game. I mean, he hit every other target.
Remarkable.
And I think while Pete's in his horse stance watching all that, it's like, this isn't supposed to happen. You're not supposed to make it look this easy. And I'll give you one more thing I love, Salk. And if he is going to close this gap, because I would answer your question, it's not about yards. I think it's about just humanity. Like, just people knowing Russell and not Russell the robot. And when he does this after the game, I think he furthers a connection with both the local audience and certainly the national audience too.
You were emotional as you came over here. Why?
I'm just a little emotional. Because, you know, we had a tribute to Paul today, and he gave me an opportunity, you know, and I'm just grateful. Just grateful. You know, win or lose, you know, God is good, and I'm just grateful that he gave me an opportunity. God did, and Paul, you know, and this organization, you know, I love playing here.
We talked a lot as our show was wrapping up over the summer about a different Russell. Like, wow, that's an authentic, like, he is just different in press conferences.
Yeah, he's been more willing to speak his mind.
Speak about players.
But I don't think that's going to change his MVP voting.
I think it's going to make more of a connection with the audience.
Yeah, I don't think so. Locally. locally it will, but I don't think he has any of that rep nationally. I don't think it's the same.
You don't think so?
No, because they see him smiling in commercials and all that. I don't think he has that. He's just yards. He's seventh in yards, tied with Tom Brady. He's not first. Patrick Mahomes is number one, 1,831 yards. Like, that to me is just kind of the long and short of it. Never mind. Do you know what Russell's quarterback rating is off
like
the top
127.
Of your head? 127. It's 126.3.
It's nuts.
It's ridiculous through five games. I mean, he is so, if that is a, if more than anything else, a measure of efficiency, which is what it is, right? It's quarterback efficiency. That's what he is. And he doesn't need a gazillion attempts.
There's one other guy right now. If the season ends today, as far as his yards per attempt, what's his yards per attempt? It's over nine, right?
Yes. Yeah. It is nine.
Yeah. 126 rating, yards of attempt above nine. There's only been one other player in the history of the NFL who ended a season with those numbers. And that was Joe Montana. One season. That's the level with which he's playing at. And these are not stats that don't match up with play. All these stats are doing is paying off what every one of us in this room has seen this year.
Yeah, he's been remarkable.
Best that Russell has ever been.
He's been nearly perfect. Now, here's the problem. What the heck's going on around him? We talked last week on the podcast, said, okay, there have been a couple of guys who have played up to their potential or beyond it. I got to tell you, the most aggravating thing I've seen so far this year watching the NFL was watching Indianapolis run all over Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're supposed to be. I maybe you don't have a guy. What's the guy's name? Quentin Nelson, the left guard. Okay, he's ridiculous.
Actually, nobody else does.
All right, nobody else. I get it. Nobody else has him. I know that.
He is Larry Allen reincarnate.
Right. I get it. He's the best in the game, best guard in the game. Dave Wyman nearly took my head off yesterday when I suggested that he was the best player on the field on Sunday night. Dave's like, a guard?
Wyman doesn't respect.
Guard's the best. Like, I think he was the best player on the field. He was the best player on the field. He was nonstop just creating these gigantic. Who the heck's Marlon Mack? That's just a guy.
Who's Marlon Mack?
He's
South
a guy.
Florida Bowl. That's who Marlon Mack is.
Yeah, he's just a guy.
Mr. Mack to you.
Really? If I had to, I thought he was going to be from Connecticut. If I had to guess, I thought he went to UConn.
Played for Willie Taggart down in South Florida.
Whatever.
In their double-digit win season.
I don't care.
All right, then I'm with Mike. He's probably a phony.
Right.
Willie Taggart. Well,
come
right,
on.
Hold on.
He's a guy. And he ran for like a gazillion yards because their offensive line.
Physically overwhelming.
Right. And the Seahawks aren't that. The Seahawks offensive line, you would say right now, has been a weakness. Now, maybe your boy Jacoby Jones is going to step in there at right guard and make a big change. Brock, that's your guy. Jake was telling me he had like a Pro Bowl. Jamarco Jones.
Wide receiver.
Sorry. Jamarco Jones.
Get your name out his name out your mouth.
Whatever, dude. Jamarco
What's his
Jones.
Name?
Jamarco Jones.
Thank you.
Maybe he's going to play at the Pro Bowl level that Jake thought he did on last
Jake
Thursday.
Came in ranting and raving saying that if Jamarco Jones is what he was in that game after Jake watched the tape, he will be an All-Pro by next year, that he was a flawless contributor.
Can we play back the tape of who I was most excited to watch?
We don't need to. It was your guy. Jacoby Jamarco Jones.
There was something fishy going on with that Jamarco Jones thing. First off, I never saw DJ Fluker get hurt. Second off, who's their backup guard? It's Ethan Posick.
Right.
So why did Jamarco Jones go in? Having very famously, they made the big point after the game that he had never played guard before. He was attacked.
Right.
It's like, well, what? Why did we do that?
Well, those other guys haven't been playing very well, and he did. I mean, say what you want. I mean, he helped. But why can't their offensive line do what Indy's does? They've spent just as much in terms of resources.
Yep. Because it's not just plug and play. Because you don't snap your fingers, and one year's book is exactly the next year's book. You don't just start this season in 2019 and say, oh, that's a continuation of 2018. That it is different. Afedi is in a contract year. He's not playing as well.
He's not playing.
I don't know if that is. Year. I don't know if that's too much pressure he's putting on himself. Certainly, all of these teams around the league have basically all implemented a very similar plan against these Seahawks.
Okay, so
and
so
that is, we're not going to be sitting targets.
Should a Seahawks offensive line, do they need to make changes there mid-year? Do you want to see, Dwayne Brown at left tackle? Keep your potty at guard. Maybe you keep Britt, or maybe it's Hunt eventually. And then, do you want to see your boy Jones and then George Fant on the right side?
I think time will take care of all of this. I think with both Fluker's hamstring, I think there's any given moment your potty shows up on an injury report with a sprained foot and he's out for 4 weeks. I think time will absolutely take care of some of those decisions.
I don't care who it is. I just want to see them actually like open up lanes for their running backs to run through. I want to see them.
Carson had a 100-yard day, right? Carson's had 200-yard days.
He has, but early in games, there's nothing. I mean, they did not start opening up holes until the second half of either of those two games where he rushed for 100 because their throwing game eventually sort of loosened up people stacking the ball. But they're not moving people.
Nope.
I mean, the third and the worst play of the by far, the worst play of that game, the two worst plays, I mean, I guess the third and short at the end of the game where they played the little
triple option.
That was disastrous. But the other was at the end of the first half when, once again, they get into shotgun on third and one and run the stupid read option. Now, I used to be the biggest fan in the world of the read option with Marshawn. Yep. I don't think it is their best chance in short yardage unless Russ is going to keep it.
Yep.
And more often than he has, stop getting in shotgun and running read option with Chris Carson in short yardage. Get under center, hand the ball off, and let the guy run downhill or give yourself an option of running actual play action, which, by the way, they used for the DK Metcalf touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Run downhill and cut it out.
Thank you.
All right. Is that enough?
I think so. What are you going to tease to now?
We're not teasing. It's a podcast. We don't tease in a podcast.
Are you not doing that anymore?
What segment are we going to get to next? No, I really like that from the first one we all listened to.
I ranted and raved, and so, Brock, it's your turn to rant and rave because something happened with your little precious
Howdy's
Huskies.
My turn or
Howdy's turn? I don't know. I heard Howdy do it the other day, and I thought he was faking it, so I think I'm going to have to go. I felt like Howdy was kind of overdoing his Husky anger, so we might start with Brock because, obviously, Howdy's kind of full of it. The Huskies look like garbage this weekend, and I guess we'll discuss in just a sec. All right, it was 23-13 Stanford over Washington this weekend. I don't know if that really tells the whole story. I mean, a 10-point loss is one thing. It did not feel that way. I mean, the Huskies, I guess, had their opportunities, Brock, but they just got run over, right? The same way we were talking earlier about Indianapolis running over Kansas City, Stanford did every bit of that and more to Washington. That Cameron Scarlett dude, I mean, there were times where it was the offensive line that was creating holes, and then other times, especially in key moments late, it was like, all you got to do is tackle this dude.
Okay, before we get
and
to
he's running you over.
Before we get to any of the details of any of that, can we just like step up a level and just say that was the worst loss for Chris Peterson in his last 5 years?
No.
Are you sure? Because
didn't they lose to Cal twice, including last year?
I would like to have this conversation.
No,
I think that
loss to Cal last year is worse.
I think that was the worst loss under Chris Peterson as far as what I watched over 60 minutes.
No. The reason the loss to Cal could be worse is that Peterson questioned himself in that game. He benched his quarterback.
That Cal team was bad. I mean, like, they're better this year, but
this Stanford team is really bad.
You want to talk about bad?
Really, really bad.
What if they're not?
They are bad.
What if they're not?
But they're not. They are bad.
Well, they already have.
The reason you know what? This is so typical of you college football fans. You do this all the time. Oh, well, they're playing all these freshmen, so they can't be good. How do you know those freshmen aren't better than the guys that were playing before them? Just because they're freshmen, they can't be good?
That's not the situation. They're
yes,
literally just not good.
No.
They already have 3 losses on the season. They're not
good. But now they're playing freshmen. Maybe the freshmen are better than the upperclassmen who've been disappointing. Maybe they are good.
Got their doors blown off in Central
Maybe Hornibrook is going to be better than whatever the guy is who hurt his leg.
Is Fink better? Yes. I bet you their quarterback is better than
I bet you Hornibrook's better than whoever he replaced.
Ugh.
You just watch. Hornibrook is going to end up going to the NFL.
Awful.
You don't even know who that is, Brock. You don't even know about Hornibrook. He came into the game. He's the quarterback from Wisconsin's brother. I saw it happen. You don't think I watch these things, but I know. This
Anyways,
is so typical of college football
I agree
football
with you,
fans.
Brock. I think this was the worst loss that I've seen to Chris Peterson.
Offense, defense, special teams, Mike. Last year, the Cal game, the Washington defense was phenomenal. They gave up 3 points. They played
this Washington defense is missing every. They're not that good.
They gave up 500 yards to a bad Stanford team.
How about
team?
The Arizona State loss a couple of years ago? That might be the worst loss of the Chris Peterson era. That was awful. That was a team that was going to go to the playoff. They were right in the middle of it all.
You can't make multiple field goals. Yeah, that was brutal.
That was
special
awful.
Teams. Mike, this was all three phases. That's why I think this was the worst. This was offense, this was defense, and this was special teams. In no phase of the game did you go down against a 2-3 Cardinal team who had their doors blown off by UCF, who had their doors blown off by USC, who barely beat Oregon State in Corvallis, who is just teetering right there for you for the taking, to go in there and stomp on them and step on them early and say, yep, this is going to be the exact same story you guys have suffered all year long. Instead, well, you didn't do that. Instead, you drove down, scored a beautiful touchdown, as you've done a bunch of times this year, and then you did absolutely squat for the next 50 minutes of that game.
All right, so
defensively, you didn't tackle. Defensively, you played with no stinger. Defensively, you let a guy have a career career day. Cameron Scarlett is not some young player. He's been there for 5 years, and he has never had a day like he had against you that day. You did not in any phase rise to the occasion, and that is why I think cumulatively in all of those things combined, this was the worst loss for him.
First of all, it's my favorite because the first time I've ever heard you not come out of a UW game just making excuses for everything they do. So maybe it is the worst loss if it's actually driven you to be critical.
You're welcome.
I think that's incredible. Second of all, once again, college football guy being like, oh, well, Cameron Scarlett's been around a long time. He's the backup forever, so of course he's never had 150
had 3 years. Bryce Love never played.
Fair.
He was in and out for like
that's
2 years.
That's fair. That's a good point.
If you want to try to go college football guy with me, we can
but
do this.
But you are a college
you're
football
You're listening
guy.
To Candy and Mike and the whole crew,
right.
And you've got Tom, Jake, and State. You're listening to a lot of other stuff. I'm actually
so let me ask you this.
Watching this, yeah.
Is this just a bridge year for the Huskies?
This
are they
is a
not
problem.
That good?
This is a problem.
Is this a bridge year waiting? Because the defense is
defensively,
not
defensively, this is a bridge year. Defensively,
well,
their linebackers are not good enough. Defensively,
okay.
you could absolutely lose
let's
four
start
games
there.
This year. Yes.
This is a bridge year for the Husky defense. If
yep.
that's the case, once you start with that premise,
correct.
Everything else kind of changes a little bit, right? Because the offense then either needs to be so incredibly dominant that it gives your defense a chance to grow,
yep.
or it's a bridge year for them too. So let's say they're not that dominant. They're
scoring 20 points a game.
The offense, because the wide receivers are not good enough to be incredibly dominant.
But that's the problem, because everything we learned about this team in the offseason and everything that Husky fans expected was you have all the tools, minus maybe a marquee wide receiver, to be one of the best offenses in the Pac-12. This is the best assemblance of talent that you've had, top to bottom on offense, that you've had since Chris
Save
Peterson has been
receiver.
Here.
Really?
Save for
Save
one
for
receiver.
One receiver.
More than the... Really?
Yes.
No.
John
you have,
Ross
you
and
have
Miles
a ton
Gaskin?
Of fifth-year
what are you talking about?
Linemen.
First of all...
You've got a huge stable of running Dante backs Pettis? With the most talented running back you've
I
had.
Totally disagree with you. The year that you had John Ross, Dante Pettis, Chico McClatcher...
He's still on
Miles
the team.
Gaskin... What are you talking about? The
Chico
other, what was the other running back's
name? He doesn't catch passes anymore.
Well, I know, but that was back when he was good.
Oh, okay. So he just got
and
worse.
And you had Will Dissly. Like, that was the that
Andrew
the team.
Quarterback?
Yeah, well, but that Andrew was when he was still good.
Yeah, get to that.
Yes. I mean, I'm not convinced that Eason's good. I think he's going to be a first-round pick in the NFL because he's tall and he throws it hard. But I'm not convinced this guy's any good.
Do you miss Jake?
I don't miss Jake Browning for 1 second because I wholeheartedly believe that the coaching staff has done something wrong this
season. A year ago, this team scored on the season 26 points a game. You went into this season and said, man, if they score 26 a game, there's going to have to be change. Right? This is just not working. We're going to give Bush Hamden the benefit of the doubt year one.
Averaging like
In conference games, they're averaging 20 points a game. Mm. Right, and against USC, against Cal, and now against Stanford, you're averaging 20 points a game in those three. You return everybody up front. You've got two tight ends that should and could play in the NFL. You've got three running backs behind what is supposed to be a first-round NFL quarterback. And yes, you've got pretty average receivers, though you pulled one kid from USC, a 4- to 5-star receiver named Puka Nacua, that you are just deciding not
to play.
But
he's a freshman. You already said they're not good.
While other
freshmen aren't good.
While other teams in this conference are seeing freshmen emerge, while Stanford's freshmen beat you up front. So, I mean, you can't have it both ways
and
here.
And UW's using freshmen in the secondary on defense that are performing.
There's freshman safety, a freshman corner, so they're playing some of their freshmen. This offense, this can't happen. I'll just put it that way. And when Chris Peterson got on that plane at 11 o'clock and flew from Palo Alto to Seattle, I can only imagine as he sat in row 1A, nobody talked to him. I can't imagine anybody on that staff talked to him. I'm imagining that plane was as quiet as it's ever been. That was a big, fat slice of humble pie that was put in front of you. And, Mike, there has to be serious accountability to what is going on offensively.
Well, do you start then admitting this is a bridge year and say, okay, if that's the case, you've now lost two games to opponents you probably shouldn't have lost to, although the Cal loss is looking better, I would say, just based on how they played. I heard you call them the Takers over the weekend.
Yes.
It sounds like Joe's not a huge fan of the
Cal
nickname
either.
Cal has
one conference win, by the way.
It sounds like Joe's not a huge fan of that nickname.
Yeah,
either.
Not a great nickname.
He's like, yeah,
but they're the Takers.
I don't
know
about the Takers.
Yeah, yeah. A bridge year. So does that change your expectations? If this team goes 8-4, 7-5.
Well, does it change? Do you bench the quarterback?
What are you talking
about? The quarterback?
Yeah, why not?
Bench the quarterback.
If it's a bridge year, why not give one of the next guys? He's not going to be
what
with you after
guy?
This year. Do you have the next guy in this roster?
No.
So your quarterback next year is not on the roster right now?
Oh, it could be Dylan Morris. I mean, we'll see with competition.
But
this is about
freshman.
Isn't this about getting a first-round talent at quarterback right? Isn't this?
You've already lost two games.
But if
your
he's
season's
leave
over.
In the first round, and it's a bridge.
Right, who cares?
Invest.
I mean, that's good for him, but it's not good for you.
It's great for you to put your quarterbacks high up in the draft so that you can get better talent in the future. It's absolutely great for you to have that guy perform.
I know, like
well.
when they sent Jake Locker in the first.
Yeah,
part
and
of
then
the
they got
round.
Jacob Eason.
Mm-hmm. Like 10 years later.
Yeah, because that stuff matters.
What
those
about
kids,
the people they got
those
in between?
Kids are growing up watching this team with their icons.
How do you stop it? That's the worst argument you've ever made.
If he committed out of high school, then I'd give you like 1% chance.
Went to Georgia.
When he transferred from Georgia, it didn't matter.
What are you talking
at all?
About?
This is hard to watch. Saturday night, okay, we can argue about this being the worst loss or not. I don't know if we're going to convince anybody, but I will say this from a viewing experience sitting in my hotel room in Eugene last Saturday night watching that. That was the most debilitating, frustrating, the lack of usage of talent and seeing your players flourish and grow. Anytime you're a coach, or you're an analyst, you just want to see players who you know are capable of doing more. This is really for the coach. An analyst just analyzes what's going on. But for a coach, for my dad, for Mike Heward, for my little brother Luke, everywhere he's been, all you want to do is take your players and grow them to be better. All these shows we got on our station, Salk, is your program director over them and on in the whole building. All you want to see is these shows do what? Maximize your talent, grow, utilize the skill sets and talents you have and make it happen.
Look, I'm with you on
and
all
to watch
things.
That Saturday night, to see Sevan Ahmed taking steps backwards, to watch an O-line not be able to pick up the most basic TE stunts, and these guys are seniors that have played a ton, to watch a quarterback so gun-shy, pulling out spin moves that Jake Browning was clapping in Minneapolis like, yeah, whoa, that's a great spin move. Watching receivers that have not grown. Chico, who's taken steps backwards in his career.
Yeah.
That is the stuff that
I agree with all that.
Debilitating.
I totally agree with all that. But I guess, and I understand this is a pro football fan's view, not a college football fan's view. But from my angle, I look at it and say, okay, you've lost two games this year. Oregon is better than you. You're not going to win the Pac-12. Like you're done for this year. It's a bridge year. Your defense is not good. You've got to figure out a way to be as good as possible as soon as possible. And if Jacob Eason's going to leave at the end of the year because the NFL is going to come calling no matter what, what's the point of continuing to play him? Why not? If you think Dylan Morris has a chance, or you think one of the other kids has a chance,
don't.
Why not play them?
So here's how college works in that regard. You have a top 15 class right now. You just got the kid down at Sam's school at Kennedy, Savelle Smalls, who flipped. Didn't have you in top 10. So from a recruiting standpoint, Mike, you have to get better every week. You have to grow. You have to be prominent. You have to be salesworthy. Perception matters in college football.
Right.
So the thing has to be going on the right track. You have to flush this game. You get Oregon on ABC here in a couple weeks. You got to beat Oregon when they're 13th in the country. Like the needle has got to be going the right way
because
at
if you
all
start losing,
times
those kids
in college
start
football. That's right. Then they decommit and they want to go to the next shiny thing. And that is the way that from a sales perspective, a perception perspective, college football
and
works.
And in that way, it's similar to baseball because in baseball, it's the same way.
No,
you start
I don't know
proving
that I
yourself
believe
you
all
lose,
that.
You have to pay a premium to get free agents in because they don't want to come play.
I don't know that I believe that that is going to go away that quickly. Like, if that's the case, then everything you've built here over the last 5 years is a waste of time. Like, I don't know, man. If a couple of games and deciding that this is a bridge year and you're going to start moving to next season, that is immediately going to get all these kids to bail on you?
Every one of these other schools in the conference saying, you
what
sure
happened?
You
but
there?
You're getting all your
look,
OKGs,
look, look, look,
and they
Sam
should be
Heward
committed.
Should be looking around. Look, I'm with you guys.
Look what's happening to your NFL
all right.
quarterback
so
talent.
You're telling me that if they make a decision after another week or so that they're going to go to Dylan Morris instead of Jacob Eason because they want to start building for next year.
And lose more games.
Then guys like Sam are going to be like, maybe I'm out. No, they're not.
Oh. Absolutely.
No, they're not.
Would Sam Heward be out? No. Would 10 of these kids? Yes. That is how fickle recruiting is. In fact, I don't know if you saw over this week.
You think that that would be worse for recruiting than watching Bush Hamden continue to show he has no clue whatsoever how to use weapons
no,
on his offense?
No, that's why you fire that guy and get somebody
oh,
in that
Oh, well, but
matters.
now you're showing you're a program in turmoil. Oh, they fired their offensive coordinator
who's
been recruiting me. We all got to get out of here. Bush Hamden's gone. I don't know. I think you guys live in so much fear in the college football world. And, like, I don't know. I don't think it
and
needs to
way,
be that complicated.
Dylan Morris and Jacob Sermon aren't close. I mean, Jacob Eason's an A. Those guys are C or D.
I totally
you
understand
You have to
that.
Give yourself a chance to beat
but
Oregon.
But your A is going
to
leave
Washington
at the end of this
State.
Year. Why
as
not
you
try to
saw,
turn your C into an A-?
As you just saw, when you're a 4-1 team, you can lose to anybody in this league, including Stanford, including Cal, including anybody else. You got to put your best foot out there. Here's the last thing. And here's, I think, the biggest challenge for Bush Hamden. He doesn't have much help on that staff. That is the single biggest challenge that he has on that staff.
I thought they got, like, the
staff.
New greatest wide receiver team of all time.
Great recruiter. Absolutely great recruiter and pretty good with receivers.
You need him to keep all those recruits. But as far as a schemer,
as far as a play caller, as far as having pedigree and background and someone that's been there. And, you know, everyone's like, wow, Jeff Tedford. Was it really Jeff Tedford? Yes, Jeff Tedford played an amazing role. Why? Because he was an unbelievable sounding board for Jonathan Smith when there was a little bit of adversity.
All right, you're getting worked up. This is a podcast. You're not supposed to get that worked up on a podcast.
I don't know. That felt good.
You're supposed to calm down.
That's the best segment we've ever had.
This is just a podcast. This isn't the radio show. It's just a podcast. Okay. You don't have to get that worked up. Right. It's okay. All right. We're going to talk to Mike Tirico. That'll calm everybody down, don't you think? Sure. I got a very important golf question to ask Tirico. I have no idea whether he's going to be ready for it. I'll probably embarrass ourselves with our favorite guest, the first guest on the new podcast, coming up here in just a sec.
Congratulations. Matt Hasselbeck was the first on our radio show ever. He was the first when we rebooted our radio show, but... You got the boot. Mike Tirico's the first on the podcast, so I hope you feel really special
about this. I've replaced Hasselbeck. That's good.
Yep.
That's good.
You're our favorite. We went with our favorite number one guest, the person who could talk about the most things. You won the vote. You were too kind, man.
I'm happy you guys are working out for you guys. Congrats. Be cool.
It's definitely weird. It's a strange and very different
right? It is. It is different.
Yeah. Will you speak in podcast voice just like we will? Like,
see, we're speaking in podcast voice right now.
It's not like the energy of live, but it's still weird, isn't it?
It's so strange. Yeah, because Brock and I are accustomed to doing a show based on energy, and everything that NPR tells me says that podcast is supposed to have no energy. So I don't really know what to do.
I know. It's confusing. Please, whatever.
My wife would prefer if I talked the other way. Hey, can we talk some Russ? Peter King. Wasn't even put, like, he's like, oh, yeah, got to get McCaffrey in there for the MVP voting. And, you know, Russ doesn't even come up as an idea for the national media. Still, what would Russell have to do to overtake Patrick Mahomes and random dudes like Christian McCaffrey to be considered part of the MVP conversation?
He should have been after Thursday night, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, usually those conversations are based off of national games and when people see what guys are doing. And off the Thursday night, how do you not walk away and say the guy's playing incredible? But I think if they stay in the mix, the profile of games will give people the chance to see it on a more regular basis.
Why has he been – maybe he hasn't been. I'm curious your opinion on this. From our standpoint, Mike, in the Pacific Northwest, it feels like over 8 years of his career – he feels underappreciated. As crazy as that sounds, is that a fair observation on a national level?
Yeah, no, it's not crazy. It's not. And I don't know if it's, you know, there are enough national endorsements and there's enough celebrity involved there, not just with Russell, but obviously with his wife, that there's the crossover type stuff that usually takes you from football player to celebrity. I do think it has a little bit to do with this Seattle team had mega personalities, and those mega personalities left. And Russ is a very different kind of personality. So his persona became, I'm a little deep here psychologically, his persona became developed and just accepted by folks as, you know, you got a bunch of loud guys on the defense, and then there's Russell, who's kind of the quiet guy who just keeps it going, and he wins because of their play and bravado and all that. And nobody really spent the time to invest in how important Russell was and how he grew year after year after year after year as a player. So maybe it will be one of those things that because the Seahawks have stayed in the conversation and will be, oh, they're back. And guess what? When you watch on a national level, you go, oh, I don't know half the guys in their secondary. And maybe that will get people thinking, hey, Russell Wilson's pretty good. He's the guy who's making this thing go on the offensive side in a very different way. So I think there is a chance for it to grow. But I agree. I think he and Rodgers and Aaron, I think because of the Green Bay thing and the post-Favre, Aaron sticks out more. I think they are stuck in that middle section of they're not Brady, Eli, Roethlisberger, Rivers, who've been around for 15-plus years. And they're not the flavor of the month. They're kind of, they're still here. They're still really good. Matthew Stafford is kind of that guy, too. Obviously not with the Super Bowl. But I think that's why. I think there are multiple reasons. So it's geography. It's the dominance of the defensive personality. And just the guy has grown as a player without a lot of people paying attention to him.
Mike, we're 5 weeks into the NFL season. What have you learned about the league this year?
that the AFC is not very good. So my theory is, if I give you Kansas City and New England, maybe it should be the other way around, New England and Kansas City, I want you to take those two teams. I'll let you pick a third. Both of you guys, this is a podcast, we can have fun. Who's the third best team in the AFC?
Pass. I pass to Brock. I don't want to answer. They all stink.
No, go ahead. No, give me someone. Come on. Who's the third best team? There's no right answer.
I'm not saying Baltimore. I refuse to say Buffalo. That quarterback's not good enough. They have a good defense.
Pick one. Come on.
No,
this Buffalo,
is...
4-1.
No.
Raiders?
No.
Raiders just beat the Bears in London.
I think I'm still going to go with the Chargers, even though they haven't shown it.
I'm going to go Houston Texans.
Chargers just lost a winless Denver. Bad pick, but that's okay. You can have that for the moment. Okay, you want to go Houston? That's good. Houston has most of the answers, I think. I would go Houston as well. Okay, so let's take Houston. Now, I'm going to run you through the NFC here, and you tell me if there's a team that you say is clearly better than Houston. Dallas, Philly. Jump to the NFC North. All four teams in the North. Green Bay, we just saw win at Dallas. Chicago has been very good, not good without their quarterback right now. Minnesota, still a very good defense and two good receivers. And Dalvin Cook deserves McCaffrey conversation. And Detroit, which played Kansas City as well as anybody played them until Indy did the next week. Then I'm going to give you in the NFC South, just New Orleans. I'll hold the Kyle Allen-led Panthers on the side for now. And then I'm going to give you your guys in Seattle, San Francisco undefeated after Monday night, and the Rams. That's 10 NFC teams who I think are better than the third best team in the AFC.
I agree with all that. Let me ask you this, though. Are any of those 10 teams better than the Patriots or Chiefs?
Chiefs showing some cracks here. Not just Mahomes gets banged up, is not as mobile, they don't win the game on Sunday night, but even the week before that against Detroit, Mahomes throws no touchdowns. Just like Matt Patricia put a blueprint out there that the Rams haven't solved just yet in the week 13 or 12 game last year that was copied by Chicago and then the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Maybe there's something out there what Patricia did that Indianapolis was able to follow. We'll keep an eye on that. But I don't think anybody's better than New England. But my point is, the original question that I submarined four questions ago. Look, the NFC is really, really good. There are going to be really good teams if they stay healthy who are going to miss the playoffs. And the AFC side, you know, playoff berths build you momentum in your building, momentum in your organization, get guys extended. It's somebody like the Bills, the Raiders, Baltimore, perhaps Cleveland. I still think they can get their act together. One of those teams is going to end up winning a playoff game here.
Yeah. Maybe
and
Indy.
They're going to build some momentum.
Maybe Indianapolis. Maybe Indy. We shouldn't sell them short. It's different. I mean, they don't have the quarterback for it, but I mean that. We were talking about this earlier. If I'm Pete Carroll and I watch that game the other night, Sunday Night Football, that's like what I'm trying to build. I just don't have the offensive line to pull it off. But that's Pete Carroll football right there.
Can I just fight? We'll shut up and we'll defer to the quarterback who's on the call here. Maybe they do have the quarterback. You know, Jacoby Brissett is not a Hall of Famer, but, you know, 10 touchdowns, taking care of the ball, running the ball a lot. You know, Brock, what's the best friend for a quarterback? A good running game?
Mm-hmm.
They're playing to what they have, and mm-hmm. I like that. They can win a playoff game with Jacoby Brissett, at least in my uneducated opinion.
Okay, well, let's drill down into this NFC West, which is fascinating. Yeah. All the divisions in football, this one is right now, as we sit here just after the quarter poll, as fascinating as any of them. Which team has the most substance in the NFC West?
I'm not ready to come off the Rams, but I'm getting a lot closer.
That a podcast?
Yeah. You would not do that on NBC. Yeah. I don't see you doing that on Sunday Night Football or anything, Mike. Come on.
Might do it on the old radio show with you guys.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
We're going to cut that and use it again, I think. That was tremendous.
The Rams' offensive line is a bit concerning to me right now. And they have not been able to... You know, it felt like you could just turn over in the Rams to get 23 yards on a play, whoever they wanted to go to. I don't feel that sense of dominance with them right now, whether it's the O-line and time. But look at Seattle. Look at the pressure of Seattle. Interesting little XO thing that was for nerds fun to watch. As Seattle did what happened to Goff the week before, which by Tampa Bay, let's give him the pressure right up the middle with the double A gap for the football chatties, the two guys on either side of the center shoulder, coming in there. How about the Rams taking their running back and putting him right up there, almost one step behind the center, to give Goff just an extra second to throw? Fascinating, because it just tells you how much he, like every other quarterback, hates pressure in his face. So I don't know if the Rams are there anymore. I want to say Seattle in a large regard. Will that secondary continue to play at this level? And if the front keeps getting better, we know it will get fortified here, and additions coming. The linebackers, we all know those three linebackers. I'll take those three against anybody's linebacking core in the league. Maybe the secondary doesn't have to be great. We have to just change our mindset to think about that. So maybe Seattle does have as much as everyone else. The little secret of San Francisco, they have built a really good front. Without Joe Staley, they are still okay on the offensive side. And Kyle Shanahan can mess people up. I mean, he had the Patriots on skates in the first half of the Super Bowl. I will just not forget that and what he did call in plays for Atlanta. So I'm going to give you a definitive answer. I'll get off the limb here and I'll say San Francisco for now. And I stand the right to change next week.
You've been watching the baseball playoffs?
Very little. Least baseball playoff action I've watched in my life. I don't know if it was just the timing of when the baseball playoffs are starting, but I'm not in right now. Why are you in?
I am. I mean, I'm just a baseball fan, so I'm watching. I'm not obsessively watching until probably the next round, but you get some really good teams in baseball this year, and that to me is fascinating. But if you're not watching, let's find something else. Are you watching golf this time of year?
What else are you doing? There are also, here's the problem. There are also some atrocious.
There are, but they're gone now. We don't have to think about them anymore. They're off into their hot stove season. Now we're left with the Astros, who might be epically good. The Yankees, who might be really, really good. There's some really good teams left.
I felt like the haves and the have-nots took me away from enjoying baseball this year. Now, maybe because the team I follow in Detroit was not historically bad, but
they were have not, I think. Yeah,
they were have nothing, not even have not. They have nothing at all. But what will be interesting is to see how the Dodgers handle the pressure of a game five, because they were kind of anointed. And if Washington beats the Dodgers, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, you might know the answer. If Washington beat the Dodgers after trading Bryce Harper, that's one of the funnier things that would happen. That's one of those things that you sit there and you just go, man, that's got to hurt. No matter how many millions you sign for it, that's one of those things that just hurts. Next series, the LCSs, I think I'll be more dialed in. It'll also fit better with our schedule.
All right. So let me ask you about the weirdest story in sports right now. I have no idea if you're paying attention to this, but you're my only
I'm going to say definitively no.
You have no idea. Mike knows things about things. Mike is one of those guys who follows everything.
I may be proven wrong here. So,
is this the Elena Deladon injury in the finals?
It's not that. This is about golfer Kevin Na. Have you followed this story at all? So Kevin Na
is walking in putts?
No. Although he was doing that over the weekend in Vegas at the Shriners, and he won ultimately in a two-hole playoff. He beat Patrick Cantlay, who choked. And afterwards, he's doing this interview, and Kevin Na, who speaks unaccented English, I had no idea he even spoke another language, in the middle of it, stops speaking in English, asks the reporter if he can switch to Korean, where he delivers. Can we play this, Kyle?
I kept telling myself, this is a playoff that I'm going to win. And it felt great to win. I'm going to say something in Korean, too. Hangul fan, 여러분. 저를 응원해 주시고, 그 믿어 주시고, 말도 안 되는 허위 사실 때문에 저를 그런 일이 있어도 저를 믿어주시고 응원해주시고 너무 감사합니다.
All right, raise your hand if you thought that the second podcast of the Brock and Salk Show would end up with Korean being spoken, but he delivers this incredibly passionate, crying speech in Korean before switching back to English, and apparently he's denying rumors and allegations in Korean. But in 3 days since, nobody has uncovered what those allegations or rumors are. Wow. So he's denying something that nobody has even accused him of.
Wow, that's out there. You know, the one thing that Kevin was, I guess, talked about over the years was his slow play, and was really criticized for that. Mm-hmm. And through that, like, you get to speak to Kevin when we've been out on tour, and you find he's one of really likable guys. And I had don't know the translation or had any idea of where that's going to go, which is pretty interesting. Do you remember the Players Championship with Tiger walking in a putt after Kevin Na walked the putt in?
Just to remember that.
That was awesome.
He's got photographs. He has no memory.
But that showed Tiger being human for like the first time ever.
Salk has lost his memory in everything in life, Mike, but golf. Whatever you want to cite, if you want to talk about the Safeway Classic.
Cameron Champ won the Safeway just a couple weeks ago, hitting bombs.
There you go.
So did Salk remember that moment? Yes, he did.
So go back to Kevin walking that putt in, and exactly what you said, Mike. It brought out Tiger, and that just shows you how, even though the slow play thing can be an issue, how liked Kevin Na is amongst his peers on tour, by and large. So this will be interesting to follow. I was not aware of that, nor of the translation. So the translation didn't give any hint as to what it was?
No, and then, I trust Jason Sobel as much as anybody covering golf, and he has no idea what it is.
Mike,
so.
Will you just do us a favor? Will you actually go? You know much more people than us. Will you please go look into this and see if you can find out, off the record even, we don't have to attribute you, can you find out what this was?
We'll have you back on Podcast 15, and we can finally readdress the Kevin Na itches.
I'll get my people on that. So, Salk, were you excited about the news that every shot from every player in the Players' Championship will be available on TV? Depends how you're going to stream it or whatever.
I didn't know that.
But every shot of every player for the Players this year will be available, will be videotaped and available to you to stream.
That's awesome. Mike, seriously, thank you. Yes. We appreciate it. We love talking to you. You are our favorite. Thanks for doing the podcast, and let's definitely do it again soon.
Much like it was Tavares Jackson's highlight to replace Matt Hasselbeck as Seahawks quarterback, this is my highlight to replace Matt in this leadoff spot for you guys. So I hope the run's just as good as, I was going to say Tavares's, but maybe not.
There we go. Thanks,
Thank
Mike.
You, Mike.
See you guys.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
That's always nice to hear some familiar music like that. 32,000 people really listen. That's really nice. Honestly, like I... giving each other grief, and I'm sort of laughing about the podcast stuff earlier, but that's pretty awesome. Like, that honestly feels really good. Thank you to everybody who has downloaded this, and even more so if you've made it this far into the podcast. It's not like radio where you kind of come and go and maybe you kind of join in for something. Like, you have to like get here. It's a destination.
What would you say about those seeking podcasts? Because you're now a podcast guy.
Now a podcast guy.
so easy to find, right?
It's at Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
That podcast bay thing, right?
Podbay. You can get us at Podbay.
Stitcher. Nice. Spotify.
And you're
what is Stitcher?
And by the way, you're welcome.
No, don't tell me.
You're welcome.
For the answer the question stuff?
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I printed them out in size 14 font for you.
I tried to follow up and get people to ask questions, but they didn't really. They just made fun of me.
Okay.
Next question.
All right. Between the four of you, which person would give the most interesting TED Talk?
Wow. I think Kyle could give an excellent TED Talk on the finer points of tailgating.
Oh.
Get into that.
Excellent.
I've got a lot. I've probably got too much to say.
So are TED Talks
speaking
practical?
Of not making it to the end.
They can
TED
be
Talks
totally
are
practical?
Supposed to be, I have a specific area of focus and understanding that is unique to me. And I will present that to the rest of the world so they can understand.
So how this would be on the U.S. highway system. The interstate. I mean,
I have
heard a brief TED Talk from Salk about the interchange, the odds, the evens.
Well, yesterday we had a meeting talking about tolling that's going to be going on 99, and Brian Bucklew, who works in our office, kept calling it I-99, which obviously isn't true, but I started thinking about where Interstate 99 would be. I mean, it wouldn't be here. It would be a north-south road, but all the way in the East Coast, like in Maine or something. It would have to be east of 95, which is hard to do. 95 runs up the coast.
How do you get east of 95?
It's hard.
It'd have to be a bridge.
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys don't know this yet, but I'm basically giving a TED Talk for 2 weeks. I'm teaching a class at Bear Creek School.
Whoa.
They have something called Janterm, which is for the high school level in between semesters for 2 weeks. and I'll be given an 80-minute lecture per day.
Well, you are busy.
Yes, I am.
See, no wonder you have the kind of time to re-listen to our podcast. You have nothing to do until you teach your class in January.
Yes, I am.
All right.
And you're probably going to be participants in it on sports broadcasting.
Who is?
All of you.
You pointed at Howdy when you said that.
Specifically, Howdy's going to come in one day.
Here's why Howdy can't be the person to give the TED Talk. He knows everything about everything. There's not like one specific area of focus.
That's such a good point.
It would be too long a TED Talk as he talked about everything.
So I think we settled Kyle on camping and glamping.
I'm into that. Yep.
Next question.
All right.
Next question.
Saul, how many times do you take the bull by the hands on Heather per year? Not enough, I would say. That kind of...
Take the bull by the hands?
That kind of disappeared over time, I think.
Yeah, it did.
It's too bad.
Heather...
Take the bull by the hands.
Heather, take the bull by the hands.
Come on, Heather. It can't be passive.
Yeah, never. I never say that.
You never said that to her.
No. Well, no. What are you, crazy?
Take the bull by the hands.
Next question.
That's running a lot of different ways in my mind right now.
Yeah, and all of them are inappropriate.
All right. What's the matter with you? Like, hey.
What are these guys laughing about?
Seriously, I didn't even think that. You guys are gross.
Oh, my. So inappropriate.
You guys are gross.
So inappropriate.
See, we don't have the ability to play drops anymore on the podcast. We just have to have Howdy imitate them. That's great.
The dream come
Take
true.
Bull by the hand.
Next question.
All right. Answer the question, Jerick. In the 2 short weeks since the show has ended, how has your relationship dynamic changed with each other, and how do you plan to keep it as close to the same as it was before? I've actually been going over to Brock's house every morning to talk to him for, like, I don't know, 20 minutes. I drive all the way out to western Idaho, hang out with Brock for a little while, and then drive back to work.
I called Salk on something, like, last week, and he had never been more affirming to a point I've made in my life.
It's true.
I had made a point to him.
I was with him. You called him. We were in the middle of a meeting. You called, and we were like, oh, Brock's calling. What does he want? What's his
problem? I called Brock later. He had a really good suggestion.
Oh, my gosh.
He was dead on accurate.
It was the most affirming. Like, I kept replaying it.
Actually, got something right.
Listen to Salk. Look at how nice Salk is to me. I don't see him every day, and he's so unbelievably affirming.
You think it's because I'm not around you as much?
Maybe.
No, I'm always like that. It's just most of your points stink.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is?
I tell it like it is, man. When they're good, I respond favorably.
I've saved that voicemail, by the way.
Next question.
So with this whole reorganization...
Is there a voicemail? Didn't we talk live?
Oh, maybe we did talk live.
What are you talking about?
I got it in my head.
But I could confuse... You could definitely have tricked me into thinking I left you a voicemail.
Kyle thought that he had, like, finally moved on from me. Like, he was like, yes, I've got this whole new life. I'm going to produce the afternoon to midday show.
Right.
Little did he realize that I'm still sitting in the exact same seat all day long, so he still has another 3 hours.
Just chirping about and say this. and what about this? You can play this.
So poor Howdy, so frustrated.
How is your new gig going, Kyle?
It is a learning experience. It is involved.
Why?
It's a new challenge. Well, because with the four of us, it's like, you know, I'm in a car where it's an automatic transmission. It's set to cruise control. Yeah. We're driving somewhere in, like, the Nevada desert on a dead street. Like, I don't even need to touch the steering wheel. And now I'm like, you know, it's back to driving a stick shift, like, through the hills of downtown Seattle. And it's a little more hands-on. It's a lot more involved.
I like that.
Next question.
Have we been asked this before? If you guys were Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who would be who?
I'd be Donatello.
This says Salk would be Raphael, obviously. That was my favorite. He's the guy who wore red, right?
He was super intense and really angry all the time.
I love that guy.
He was shouting at everyone all the time and worried about everyone being serious about what they're doing. Raphael was such a, like...
I liked Raphael.
Oh, man, he's the worst.
I think he's the one who wore red with the scythes.
Yes, he is.
Okay.
He's always, like, angrily growling at people. Michelangelo's driving him nuts all the time.
Michelangelo's the most annoying thing. Michelangelo might be the most annoying character in any show ever.
You?
Is that me?
I'd be Michelangelo. I absolutely would be Michelangelo. I'd like to be Donatello, because that's who I played in Turtles in Time, I'd be Michelangelo.
So you're Michelangelo, so that leaves me and Kyle with who?
Leonardo and Donatello?
Yeah, who are
I don't really know the difference.
Leonardo is the big-time leader.
All right, Brock, we'll give that to Brock.
Donatello is more of like he's more of like the sage, wise sort of thinker outside the box.
Next question.
Well, that was easy.
That worked out great.
Next question.
Next question.
In general, guys, do you think tight ends are more akin to less athletic receivers or underweight O-linemen?
Ooh. Good question.
In what system?
Yeah. I think in general, they're more like less athletic receivers.
Agreed.
These days.
Agreed.
Right?
Yes.
One of those less athletic receivers burned KJ Wright down the sideline last week. KJ Wright took an angle of pursuit on a slow tight end and got beat.
He's struggling a little bit, Brock, for all the talk that the running backs are great.
Are
we going to see somebody else at some point?
The linebackers? Yeah, I mean, you just heard Tirico say it, right? I mean, perception is reality. This is the best linebacking crew in the league. This is the best linebacking crew in the league. Just because they're known.
Yep.
I don't know.
He got burned on the Tedrick Thompson pick.
Is Bobby playing as well as he did a year ago?
I said last week that I haven't seen him.
I mean, these are watches.
Bobby's half step slow, KJ's full step.
Before we get out of here, do I need to say something about Tedrick Thompson's pick?
Yeah, you're going to have to own up to that.
Hell of a play, man.
Tedrick Thompson coming through to do the one specific thing that you said he doesn't do, which is make big plays.
Unbelievable play by Tedrick Thompson.
He couldn't tackle. Nope. He missed about four tackles.
He can't tackle.
Eyes closed.
He's the worst tackling safety I think I've ever seen.
Yep.
But that was one heck of a play. That is one of the most amazing catches I've seen.
Yep.
Really, it was impressive.
Way to go, T2.
That was pretty good. All right. There you go. That's podcast number two.
Gosh, you don't have to be so loud at the end of it.
All right, I didn't mean to. Let's get back to being
quiet. Why are you shouting?
I don't know. I don't know how to do this. It's still new to me. I don't like it.
The endings are weird, isn't it?
It's very weird.
It's so strange.
Yeah, we should have to, like, sign off and give it to somebody else.
Until we talk again, friends.
Okay. Is that what we're going to say? I'm not calling people friends. That's an absolute no-go
from
this guy.
Hay in the barn?
Oh, that's right. Hay in the barn.
Is that what we do?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Until then, the hay.
Barn.
See everybody. Get to the chopper!